Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, episode 191. Izzy and I both have a lot of things to talk about, so we're going to talk about a lot of things, stuff and things. We're going to do some wide receiver and running back rankings. We're going to do some polls, and we're going to talk about some of our recent trades, and we're going to have you maybe rate our trades. RateMyTrade.com.
No, just your trade. I ain't,
oh, so we're going to look at just mine. We're not going to look at yours.
No, mine are elite, so we don't need to look at them.
Just to be clear, we're talking about trades still, right?
You'll never know.
All right, well, we're just going to look at mine then. Don't know what we're talking about. We're going to look at mine, and we're going to evaluate it.
Show me.
I'm your host, John Paul Hurley, on Twitter at FF.
Take your trades off slowly.
Take your trades off, yep.
Take your trades off slowly.
Joining me, Izzy Elkafoss, talking about taking some trades off on Twitter at DTC underscore IzzyE. Izzy, what's new?
Not much, man. Another week. We survive another week without COVID cancellation or COVID rescheduling. So I say that's a win.
It's funny you mentioned that because before the podcast, when we were talking about topics, I wanted to go through COVID-geddon and what people would do if the season was canceled. But my idea for that topic was canceled because of COVID, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think we all, two out of three of us came down. No, we didn't come down with it. But have you had any personal close calls with COVID?
No, my mom has it or had it.
Did she get it from you?
No. No. But she got it. She got the Ronas.
That's not good. That sucks. I got a feeling in this, just like, maybe we won't go too deep into it, but just from the brief touch base on it. I think I read on Roto that there were like 57 new COVID cases last week alone between players and coaches in the NFL.
I'm starting to believe it. So check this out. So my mom gets the Ronas, okay, on a Thursday. I call her on Sunday. And she's at Whole Foods.
No.
I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I yesterday and today, I felt great. I feel normal. And I'm like, yeah, but I still think you got to wait.
Definitely.
By Tuesday, she feels great Monday. Tuesday, she got hit by a bus. Not literally. She's like, body aches, can't like get out of bed. And she's like that for like 4 days. And then she starts to feel better again. So, like, I think that's the big problem with the Rona.
No, like, if you come in close contact with somebody, you got to be shut down, you know? And then you got to be tested until you come out negative multiple times. Like, I mean, this is NFL standards. I they're taking all the safety precautions in the world, and yet they're still having a quote-unquote outbreak by team, you know? That's what's wild. They're taking more precautions than we are.
Yeah, it's true.
So anyway, the topic of conversation, the reason this all came about is I believe with the escalated amount of cases that we're seeing, that we could, like, more, it's more reality than it was imaginary before, but I think we could be looking at the end of the NFL season or maybe some sort of radical change, like how the NBA went into a bubble, although I don't think the NFL would be willing to do that, but I think this is, it's escalated to the point where it's become a huge concern now.
Yeah.
And just really quickly, what in your leagues, what happens if the season ends? Because now we're beyond the halfway point of the regular season and well beyond the halfway point of the fantasy regular season for the most part.
Yeah, believe it or not, only three of my leagues have COVID ruling in there.
That's crazy. What are they going to do? What's the ruling?
I haven't even looked at it. I just know there is one. I just haven't looked at it.
Yeah. So you think they'd pay out based on what place they finished, wherever they stop?
I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, I know what I would do.
What would you do? WWID.
I would say anything before 13 weeks is a refund.
Oh, wow.
So I feel I feel comfortable where if everybody plays each other one time, or I guess 11 weeks. So I feel comfortable when everybody plays each other one at least one time, determining the champion. If let's say the season, it gets canceled week 12, right? Before week 12. Well, we've had 11 weeks where every owner's had a chance to play everybody one time. I feel comfortable crowning a points champion or maybe splitting the money between top of the standings and then top vote getter or point getter is one and two. So standings one, point getter two, and then whatever, maybe like a power ranking for the third and just do one, two, three. Something along those lines.
Wow.
But I don't know. Like, I don't know what a good solution is.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in the same boat. I'm a commissioner of two or three leagues on my own, and I didn't put COVID. I mean, this is my fault. I probably should have been more prepared for the season, but you know how every year goes. By the time the season kicks off, you're like super busy and it gets pretty wild. But I put up a poll on Twitter to ask if people had a COVID ruling in place before the season started. And only about 58% of leagues do. This is after almost 200 votes. So, like, there's a big chunk of leagues that don't have anything in place right now.
What do you think of this? Depending on if there is a COVID cancellation, whoever is in the playoff hunt chops the remaining pot of, like, so let's say you have 12 teams and seven of them are in the playoff hunt, and then five teams are statistically eliminated.
Yeah.
You just split the entire pot between seven teams equally.
Equally. So you wouldn't even do, like, if there's a team that was like 9-0 right now and the season ends, you wouldn't give that team a higher share?
I mean, you could, but I think at the same time, I've had plenty of leagues where the top team didn't even advance. They got a bye and lost in the semifinals in the finals for fourth place.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I've seen teams that sneak into the playoffs a lot, and it happens a lot. It's not like it happens every once in a while. I think once you get into the playoffs, it's completely, there's so much luck is involved. So I have a hard time saying, yep, you're the best team. I'm okay with it, but I think it would just be easier to say, okay, you're in the playoff hunt. Let's just split it between you guys equally.
I think, yeah, I could see that. I might adopt a slightly different version. I like where your head's at, though, like playoff versus non-playoff. But I think that I would do some sort of a split of share based on how you finish the season. And maybe it wouldn't be huge, though. So it would be like percentage of the pot, you know, like a 25, 22, like, you know, maybe down 2.5% with each position or something like that
out of 100. Yeah. So starting at a certain number.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that works too.
And I guess it's probably a couple of dollars different. So it's not really, it doesn't matter much.
Yeah. Depending on your, the cost of your league.
But so a lot of leagues play their season for bragging rights too, and to crown a champion. It's going to be kind of weird if this does come to fruition. Like, there's going to be a year where there's just no champion, you know? And like, yeah. Empire leagues, that's another good one. Like, a lot of people play in Empire. For those that are not familiar, Empire leagues, usually if you win the Super Bowl in back to back or three in a row, the league ends, and then there's like a carryover pot that you win. And then you can decide to start again if you want to, or it's just completely dissolved. But I wonder what, like, Empire Leagues would do, what kind of decision they make, because there's a lot more gravity to their choice, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of really interesting dynamics, and I'm going to be curious to see what's going to happen. Because whether or not the season gets canceled, we do know that the COVID cases are going to get worse and worse. So there's always going to be this looming. I think we're a little bit out in front of it right now, talking about the possibilities of this, like the real possibilities now. But I'm going to be really interested to see these conversations take place in front of us.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that, like I said, 40 to 45% of leagues have nothing in place or didn't have anything in place when the season began. So it's going to be wild. But I like that. That's good. Thank you for those are some good ideas. Maybe some listeners can benefit from that. So. Into the real content, we're going to start things off with rankings. We're going to try to, at this point in the season, maybe what I'll do is I'll let you set this up too, because this is your baby. there is a set number of players. We can start with the running back position. There's a set number of players that are pretty locked in as like the top five-ish, right? And then we want to try to see if we can rank the rest, because there's just like a big, long, flat tier of players that are going to be challenging to rank. So we're going to see how good we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just have a quick conversation based on like why we've got guys in certain spots. So maybe running backs first. I will list off the running backs that you have to rank. So we're basically excluding Kamara, McCaffrey, and there's just three that we're excluding, right?
No, we're excluding five. We're excluding Kamara, McCaffrey, Barkley, Dalvin Cook, and Jacobs.
Okay, so we're excluding five, and we're ranking the next 10, right? So this is kind of like Correct. The middle, the next tier we're ranking.
Yeah.
So I'll let you begin.
Would you? Okay, so here's a question. Based on the 10 names that you have written down, do you have any of those guys ahead of the top five that we have?
Let's see. No. I'm just going to look at the first couple, because why look any deeper, obviously.
So you think the first five are clear?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I tend to agree. Okay. So let's go 6 through 15.
Do it.
Which I think after 15, there's another pretty significant tier break.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So 6 through 15. Do you want to name off these names that we have written down?
Yeah, the names we have written down are in no, and this is no particular order yet, but it's Zeke, Aaron Jones, King Henry, J.K. Dobbins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb, and Miles Sanders. I think I got them all.
Yep, that's right. And then if you're at home, you can actually just write all those names down and then do it on your own as well, because I think it's a difficult exercise.
It wasn't as easy as running backs were easier than wide receivers, but neither were particularly easy.
It's hard.
All right, so we'll kick us off. Are you ready? If you're not ready, I can do mine first.
Yeah, if you know yours, yeah, I'd love to hear.
I've written
yours.
Them down. I literally had to write them down because I wouldn't have been able to do it on the fly, because honestly, minute to minute, it could change.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So. I still like Miles Sanders. I don't want to knock him off that spot based on him having a few injuries. I'm not going to put him in the injury prone category just yet. So I'm going to go Miles. And I think out of all of the running backs that we've got in this tier, his situation is the most clear, which is kind of ironic because typically speaking, the Philadelphia Eagles don't make things very clear for running backs. But I'm going to go Miles Sanders at six. I got Nick Chubb for much of the same reason. His situation just isn't quite as clear with Kareem Hunt still kind of hawking some touches. But I like Chubb to come back and basically return to his, you know, 15 to 20 fantasy points a game and always being like very consistent. So, and then this might be a little bit debatable, but I got Clyde Edwards-Helaire at three. I should say eight. I don't think that the Le'Veon Bell stuff is as concerning to me as it is a lot of people. I'd be willing to buy Clyde at his current value because I know people are discounting him below, and I don't want to give away anything for later, but people are discounting him below other rookie running backs at this point now. I've actually, with both Clyde and Jonathan Taylor, I've dangled out some mid to late future first just to see if there's a frustrated enough owner, and I haven't got any bites off of that, just so you know. Then I got Derrick Henry. His is like, he's just kind of getting into that middle ground for his age, but like, I'm not concerned with his contract or anybody else taking carries from him. He's steady Eddie. He's explosive. So very consistent, very high floor, very high ceiling as well. And then I've got Zeke. I can see he's been dropping a lot, but a lot of the reason he's dropping is because the offense is just kind of in shambles, and I could see him getting hungry again and wanting to be fed some more. So I'm going to keep him there. He's got enough value insulation, at least in my opinion, to be able to survive through some of these poor performances. Jonathan Taylor next behind Zeke. Same reason as Clyde Edwards. I don't like what I've seen with the Colts and his usage, but this is just a great opportunity to buy him. I could see this turning around. I had Aaron Jones and Dobbins pretty much tied. I'm going to slide Dobbins ahead of Aaron Jones at this point. Everybody talked preseason about Aaron Jones' negative regression for touchdowns. He hasn't really experienced that in the time that he's played, but now that he's been a little bit less durable, and then with COVID looming and stuff like that, just kind of providing additional instances where you know, everybody's reliability is a little bit lower. If you pile on injuries on top of that, it's more concerning. Plus, if you combine Aaron Rodgers has raised his level of play, the Green Bay Packers are experiencing more success in the passing game, so there's less opportunity for Aaron Jones to run the ball into the end zone like last year. So I got Swift, and again, I think Swift is in the same boat with Dobbins and Aaron Jones, where I could literally slide these three anywhere. And then I think it's pretty clear to me that the final position goes to Mixon. He just he's fallen all the way down this season for many reasons. I expected Joe Burrow to breathe new life into that offense and maybe provide a little bit more space for Joe Mixon to run, but that line is just too concerning and it's not happening. So I got Mixon dead last at 15. I would be willing to put Mixon down into the tier with the guys below him as well.
Okay.
So just really quick recap: Miles, Chubb, Clyde Edwards, Henry, Zeke, Jonathan Taylor, Dobbins, Aaron Jones, Swift, Mixon.
Okay. So, all right, I'll go through mine. You can write these down next to yours if you'd like. My number one is Chubb, and I think it's comfortably for me. Number two is Miles. Number three, for a lot of what you said, I think after Miles, there's reasonable instability everywhere else. And I'll kind of go through those instabilities as we go. Clyde is three for me. It is concerning that they brought in Bell and they're just not using Clyde as much as we had hoped. Henry is four. And for him, he just doesn't get the receiving. His receiving floor is so low, or his receiving ceiling is so low that
end floor.
It just hurts. True. That it hurts his upside weekly. I wish they gave him the ball more because he's capable. And every time, not every time, but we've seen so many plays where he catches a screen pass and he's gobbled up big yardage. I don't know why they don't do it more. The four, that's a clear four for me for now. So I have those four, clear four. I really struggled with the next three, Swift, Jones, and Dobbins. Jones, I worry about just contractual issues. I'm not a big fan of LaFleur. I worry about that instability. If he got a contract, he would jump into probably third. Right, if I knew where he was going to be and he got paid good money and so on and so forth, probably jump into third. Swift and Dobbins is a coin flip for me. I like Swift more, but I like Dobbins' situation more. So it makes it really difficult. But right now I have Swift slightly ahead of Dobbins, but it's a pick 'em for me. Like if I had multiple leagues, if I had like six leagues, I'd rather have three shares of each.
So Swift, Dobbins, Jones?
No, Jones, Swift, Dobbins. And it's close. Like I could, in a week, I could flip Swift, Dobbins, and Jones in any order. Like even tomorrow, I could probably change my mind. Like it's that close for me.
Wow.
And then I have Mixon. And then I feel like it's kind of three-tiered. I think technically four. I think Chubb and Miles are in kind of their own tier. I think Clyde and Henry are in their own tier. I can see Clyde and Henry being in the other tier too, but Clyde and Henry for now, Jones, Swift, Dobbins in their own tier, and then Mixon, Taylor, and Zeke in their own tier. I have Zeke last on this list.
Wow, you've full bailed out on Zeke.
Dude, every single week I watch the Cowboys play, I am far more impressed with Tony Pollard than I am Zeke.
Wow.
And it honestly, it isn't even close for me. When I watch them play, like you can tell, sometimes it's hard to tell when players like Madison and Dalvin, even when you know Dalvin Cook is a superior player, it's hard to tell because they kind of look alike and so on and so forth, right?
Yep.
But you can tell immediately, you can't tell immediately when Madison touches the ball with Cook. It's usually, they have like similar bursts and they're both, like, it's just Cook is just more slippery and he's just got better vision. But when you watch Pollard and Zeke, Pollard looks like he's shot out of a cannon. He looks far more agile and just, it seems like he's breaking more tackles than Zeke too. Zeke is like turning into like this plotting run straight up the middle, get maybe break the first tackle and then just like fall over. yeah. after the second contact. It's just,
it's troubling.
I'm very unimpressed with Zeke. And this is the big issue that I had preseason was the contract that he got and the off the field stuff. So Zeke does not, he doesn't strike me as a gamer. You know, he just, I can see him resting on his laurels a little bit. And it seems like this year we're not getting the Zeke of past. And maybe it's like a COVID thing. I have no idea.
And it reflects in his physique too. Get it?
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
But I feel like every single week, Pollard is becoming more and more
polished,
involved in the offense. And for good reason.
I'd be interested to see what Pollard can do if he was just given the load for even a game. You know, like there was a question if Zeke was going to play this week. And I really wanted to see what Pollard was going to do. But it didn't happen.
Yeah. It would be nice. I mean, the last few games have been really concerning with Zeke, in my opinion.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, Pollard cares and he's got, you know, he's fighting for a bigger contract and, you know, he hasn't proven himself like Zeke has in the past. Zeke is just, he's a crusty veteran, you know, he's fat and happy right now. And I mean, he's still got some skill and ability, which I expect him to, like, there's going to be something that's going to turn him around. And he's going to get hungry again. That's what I'm holding on to, but I could see that going either way.
Zeke's just nonchalant. I think that's the best way to describe it.
He don't care.
He's just nonchalant. Yeah, he's just there so he doesn't get fined, you know?
And he knows the season's kind of a waste, you know? Like, yeah. he's not trying.
Yeah. And I guess that's my big concern with Zeke. Yeah. I don't know. I don't see the Zeke of 2-3 years ago.
I got to say, though, and this is the reason why I had Zeke a little bit higher in my rankings. Now, just to be clear, Izzy and I don't value these guys in these places, you know, necessarily. These are just where we rank them, you know. And I like Zeke as a buy based on your rankings, you know. Like, you've got him down in the 15 area. I like that. I want to acquire him for that.
Yeah, but once again, he was my top sell at running back at the beginning of the season. Like, I've been promoting the sale of Zeke from the very beginning. And my concerns have kind of come to fruition. So my emphasis on Zeke being not a guy I want to own is just showing up on this list. But I recognize that most people would rather have Zeke than Mixon. Right. And I think I'm in the minority, and I think that next year, there's a good chance that I am dead wrong in saying, and next year we're saying, yeah, Mixon is way below Zeke. Yeah. I think that's a more likely outcome than Mixon being ahead of Zeke. But the thing that I like for Mixon is I think he's a really, really great player, and he's still young and hungry, and he's still got juice in his legs. And I think that Cincinnati offense continues to ascend.
Yeah.
And as long as Burrow continues to ascend and teams are afraid of Burrow, it's only going to open things up for Mixon. So if I were betting, like, so if I go to Vegas right now and there was a board that said better, more fantasy points in 2021, Mixon or Zeke, and it was like probably going to be probably 250 right now, it would be probably be plus 250. I would definitely put a bet on Mixon over Zeke, but I wouldn't do the bet straight up.
Mm-hmm. I getcha.
So, but yeah, I'm more comfortable with Mixon right now. I like the potential more than what I've seen out of Zeke's. Like, we've seen Zeke's potential, and I think it's only down from here. And I think his value only goes down. Like, it might bounce back up, but I don't see Zeke ever, like, catapulting back up.
I do. I would predict that at some point this season, even Zeke's going to catch some major criticism from, I don't know, press or, like, within the team. It's going to piss him off, and he's going to come out, he's going to be fired out of a cannon like you're talking about, like you've seen some of these other players do. And he's going to kind of restore most of that. I don't think he's going to do it consistently, but he will elevate his game and kind of put the team on a show. This is just a prediction, but I think we're going to see that this season yet.
Okay.
Because he's a competitor, you know, and he doesn't like, he's worried about his image.
It doesn't seem like it to me.
Yeah, right now he's coasting. I'm just saying, like, when he catches some criticism, it's going to piss him off. He's going to come back out. And, like, I think he is concerned. He's conscious about his image. And I think right now somebody's going to say something that's going to reflect on his image and how crappy he's been playing. And he's going to come back out hot, and he'll restore some of that. He's not going to ever get back to where he was in the beginning of the season. So, you know, he's pretty much like a top three running back, top four running back, right? Wasn't it like Saquon McCaffrey, and then it was, you know, Zeke and Kamara.
Zeke
and Kamara.
Yeah, Zeke Kamara, yep.
He'll never get back into that territory again, because those guys have not only has Zeke fallen, but those guys have kind of separated themselves from the pack, you know?
Outside of Barkley.
Yeah, right, he's maintained, yeah.
Yeah, and Taylor and Zeke could flip too. I don't know. I don't know how you can struggle behind that Indy line. I mean, that Indy line's so good.
Yeah.
We were looking at Taylor having a top five situation in the league, and he's just squandering it every week.
I agree. And by the way, I think we saw this in, I can't remember what year it was, where Dak missed several games, and Zeke just wasn't the same running back. So I could also see, you know, a very strong case for somebody making if/when Dak returns, you know, Zeke's value should spike back up again in his performance. Zeke wasn't effective. And it was vice versa, too. I think Zeke was out for a while and Dak wasn't quite as good. So I think they feed off of each other, you know?
Okay. So let's say the season is obviously it's out of reach for the Cowboys.
Which I don't think will ever happen, but yeah.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah. So do you think there's a possibility that the Cowboys end up resting Zeke in a sense for next year? Like, they don't want to put unnecessarily miles on him, so they end up pulling back the Zeke touches, and it ends up being more like a 50-50 or 40-60 split, and just getting Pollard the touches since the season might not matter. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, like I could see that coming to...
And don't you think that's going to negatively impact his value?
It would, yeah. That would, if that narrative comes to fruition, that would definitely negatively impact his value. Yes, if that happens.
And at that point, I can see buying Zeke for a bounce back 2021. But from a trajectory perspective, I just don't see a positive trajectory from Zeke right now. Like the dissension, it's more evident than the other guys, and that's what's worrying me. But regardless, we'll find out. I'm curious. I mean, Pollard started the season with, you know, two carries, three carries. I think he missed a couple games. Did Pollard miss a couple games in between there?
He may have.
But week 7, he got 8 carries. Week 8, he got 7 carries. Week 9, he got 9 carries. So after Dak got hurt, he's starting to see more workload. So we'll see what happens next week. And he's doing a lot more with the touches that he gets, unfortunately, for Zeke.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. And like that's something that could happen. I don't know that that's going to necessarily happen, because I don't see the coaching staff wanting to do that. Like, they might be handed some orders down from the front office, but I mean, these coaches, like, their jobs are on the line every game, you know? It's the same thing we're seeing with the Minnesota Vikings. Like, after you start 1-5 or whatever it was, it's time to maybe start considering looking at the future of the team if you're a general manager. But these coaches don't want to lose their jobs, you know. And if you go 1-16 or 1-15, what is it? Is it 17 regular season games this year?
16. Isn't it 16? Yeah.
If you go 1-15, you run the risk of losing your job, you know. And I just don't see a lot of teams, you know, fully embracing that just for that element alone. Like, tanking is something people can try, but I don't think it's happening as much as we think it is, you know?
Yeah, I don't disagree.
So I don't know if that's going to happen.
Maybe.
But anyway, we got wide receivers to cover next. You want me to go first again?
Sure.
All right, I'll run through these pretty quickly because we're kind of getting a little bit long. But so the wide receivers that we have to rank in no particular order are Chris Godwin, Terry McLaurin, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Stephon Diggs, Calvin Ridley, T. Higgins, Justin Jefferson, DJ Moore, and Amari Cooper. How'd I do?
Pretty good. I think that's all of them. That's all 10.
So we're going to rank those. Again, this is a case where there's a pretty clear-cut top. We did top 5 for these ones too, right?
Yeah.
Pretty clear-cut top 5, so we're going to try to rank what we have between 6 and 15.
You know, I wouldn't say there's a clear top 5, because a lot of people are low on a guy like Michael Thomas, and they might have, DeAndre Hopkins or Devontae Adams, just because they're older and they'd rather have CeeDee Lamb because they like the youth. So what we essentially did was anybody, this is for receivers not named DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, and Tyreek Hill, under the age of 27.
Sure. Okay.
So these next 10 guys are all under the age of 27, which is why we left Allen Robinson, Kenny Golladay, and Michael Thomas out of this.
So here we go. So throughout the course of our running backs, I've changed my order of my list a few times in wide receivers, just because I'm as I'm looking at it, I'm like, you know, I don't like that guy there. So it's going to be kind of funny to see if I get through this and it doesn't change again. But at first of all these guys, I've got CeeDee Lamb, and I give him the same excuse that I give a lot of players. I'm not going to let Dak's injury impact his value too much. I saw what he was doing with Dak, and granted, Dak was on a historic pace with his passing. So I know it's a little bit kind of one-sided, but what I saw from a target share standpoint, I was very impressed with out of CeeDee Lamb. So I'm going to go CeeDee number one. I'm going to go Chris Godwin number two. The problem with Godwin is that he's going to have some quarterback question marks coming up. So like, he's the one that I've moved around a couple times. I moved him down, then back up. And McLaurin is my three. I know that might be a little bit of a surprise to you, but I've really enjoyed what I've seen with McLaurin without a quarterback, pretty much. With McLaurin is doing what DeAndre Hopkins has done in previous years without a quarterback. Not to the same degree, but the fact that he's 24 years old already as a second-year wide receiver stinks a little bit, but I really love what I'm seeing, and there just isn't really much competition in that offense, so I think he's going to really hoard the target share, and people are going to start coming around to McLaurin. So right live on the podcast, I'm going to go ahead and switch McLaurin to Godwin. I've talked myself into it. So Godwin at three. And then this is a spot that I've switched a lot with. So I initially started with Diggs here, and then I kept moving him down and down and down. I like Diggs. He's having a great season. There's no reason to think that he's not going to continue his pace with the volume that he's getting. But there's guys that I just like better that are younger. So like Jerry Jeudy, I slid ahead of Diggs. Really good to see his, like a lot of people are a little bit recency biased, are spiking Jeudy way up after his performance last week. And some of he just passes the eye test, you know, like a lot of people are seeing that out of him. And T. Higgins, I slid ahead of Stephon Diggs. I like the kind of volume that T is capable of getting in that offense. And he looks good also. And then this is right at the line where I'm about ready to cut it off. But Justin Jefferson, I also slid ahead of Stephon Diggs. All the same reason. You could build a super team using the 2020 rookie wide receivers. Like, it's insane how good these receivers are. And even though Izzy, we're not going to mention any more rookies in the rest of this segment outside of Jeudy, T, and Jefferson and CD, I think, right? Those are the four.
Mm-hmm.
But you could make a case for others being in, you know, in the mix at least. So it's really interesting to see this dynamic. This receiver class is insane, insanely deep. And good at the top. So then I have Stephon Diggs, like I said. And then I got Calvin Ridley. I could see that one shifting a lot, but he's just kind of like been a little bit more flat. He had a hot start, and now he's just kind of been a little bit more flat. So I like Ridley.
He's just been dinged up.
What's that?
He's just been dinged up.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of flattened out a little bit, and a lot of it's from injury, but just, I don't know. I feel comfortable having him below the rookies. And then DJ Moore and Amari Cooper is a pick'em. I would go DJ Moore first and then Amari Cooper. I just don't know what to expect out of Amari Cooper in his future with the team. I know they gave him a contract, but with my like of CeeDee Lamb, I have to have like the yin and yang with Amari Cooper. So Amari drops to the bottom because I think CeeDee excels. Those are my, and I'm sticking to it. And I'll probably change him a few times, but.
Fair enough. So can you read off your 1 through 10 again?
CeeDee Lamb, McLaurin, Godwin, Jerry Jeudy, T. Higgins, Justin Jefferson. And then I had Stephon Diggs, Ridley, DJ Moore, Amari Cooper. Let's see what you got. Let's see how different it is. By the way, our running backs were really close except for Zeke.
Our running backs were really close in the first tier, and it kind of like got a little sloppy.
Yeah, Zeke and Mixon were the biggest two discrepancies for us. But we literally... yeah, I had Zeke last. You had Zeke last. I had Mixon last. But a lot of the top four were almost identical. Yeah. So just comparing our running backs, it was pretty close with the exception of Zeke and Mixon.
Yeah. For the wide receivers, I'm kind of trying to prioritize production, what production we've seen, age, and quarterback stability. Oh, and obviously, like, and some other things play into role, like who else is in the offense, injury history, like durability concerns, that type of thing. So my one is, and these two are really close for me, for one, it was between Godwin and CD.
Wow.
And I went CD at one just because I get three extra years. Even though we've seen that elite wide receiver one season out of Godwin. We haven't seen that out of CD and a lot of these other guys. But I've gotten a taste of what I've seen out of CD, and I'll take the three-year reduction in age.
Okay.
So CD one, Chris Godwin two. I actually have Justin Jefferson at three.
Mm-hmm.
I like the age premium that I get with Jefferson. I like the fact that Thielen is getting a little bit older. I know a lot of people don't like Kirk Cousins, but if I'm comparing the situation where it's just Jefferson and Thielen versus with Higgins, it's Tyler Boyd, it's AJ Green, which that could change. I mean, that'll probably change next year. I just like the potential of Thielen aging out and Jefferson being the number one a lot sooner than I see the Higgins, Tyler Boyd. I see them kind of being 1A, 1B longer, where I see Jefferson kind of taking the bull by the horn in the next couple of years. But it's close. I mean, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and honestly, 3 through 8 are really close for me.
I could see, honestly, outside of CeeDee Lamb, I could see any of the other four rookies changing places completely. Like, I don't have any problem with that.
The other three, yeah. So I have Jefferson slightly ahead of Terry McLaurin at 4.
I'm surprised by that. I didn't think you came around on him yet.
No, I've liked McLaurin. I just don't like him as much as others just because of the... It's his second... I don't like that it's his... He's going to be going into his age...
25.
Age 25 season, he's only going to be in the league for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he came in as an old rookie. Actually, I think... So, yeah, sorry, he's 25 now. So, I don't like that he's 2 years in and he's...
Wow, yeah.
Or age 25. So, he's going to be his age 26 season in his third year, which I really hate. And I also hate that he doesn't have a quarterback. Like, we don't know. He's producing without one, which is why he's as high as he is. But... He is the one where you can say Jefferson's dealing with Thielen. Higgins is dealing with Tyler Boyd. You got Judy who's going to be dealing with Sutton. You have Ridley who's dealing with Julio Jones. He is the number one in Washington, and really nobody's there to compete with him,
mm-mm,
which is why he gets the edge at 4. I have Judy at 5. And Judy at 5, mainly because he was my top-rated receiver coming out, and I've seen enough to where I can see the upside of Judy. I think it's clear that as a route runner, he's as good as it gets. So I just don't see how he can bust at this point. I don't know what his ceiling is, but I do feel comfortable with his floor. I would like him to be a little more physical. I don't know if he's got like the out. He's kind of got Cooper syndrome where he's not like just a dominant, like he's just not a dog, you know? He doesn't have that dog in him. But I feel comfortable with this floor to put him at 5. I have T. Higgins at 6. I have Ridley at 7 because of durability and age. I mean, he's not that old, but these other guys are younger and they've proven to be more durable. The Ridley thing is a little concerning. With the injury history. Diggs at 8, also because of just age. I'd rather just get the 3 or 4 year premium on a lot of these other guys. I have DJ Moore at 9 and then Cooper at 10. So we were pretty close at receiver.
Yeah, I'm tallying it up right now. So yeah, we were only we only differed on Justin Jefferson. Otherwise, everybody else was either the exact same position or one spot away.
And where do you have Jefferson? 6?
I had Jefferson down at 6. But like I said, I would be comfortable with exchanging him in any place with Jerry Jeudy or T. Higgins. So,
yeah.
I want all three of those guys.
Yeah. Obviously, the receiving, the running backs were harder to do. And it just kind of shows you how difficult it is to get a reliable running back that really separates you from the pack.
And it's sustainable, yeah.
With receivers, it's the reason why I have less of a premium on receiver is there's so many of them. There's so many good ones. Even the older ones, you'll get good production. You can't separate yourself from the pack on a weekly basis at receiver as much as you can at running back.
Yeah.
You get that statistical advantage every week at running back, but the risk is significantly higher than receiver. So you kind of got to balance it out and decide what your preference is. But I had a tougher time doing the running backs than the receivers. I mean, the receivers, I'm kind of like putting them in order because I'm just like, okay, I'm happy with any of these guys, really.
Yeah, I agree.
But my preference is X, where with the running backs, I'm like, God, they scare the hell out of me.
All of them do, yeah.
Just so many of them do.
That was a painful... I had an easier time with running backs as they're all kind of in the same area, but my preferences kind of outkicked any of the difficulty I had with ranking them. But I had a harder time with receivers just because I kept moving things around, and yeah. Diggs is the big anomaly for me because I acknowledge that he's spiked way up in value, and I actually liked him going into the season. I expected a good season out of him, but I still can't rank him, you know, in that same grouping as the rookie wide receivers, the three others outside of CD, you know. I can't do it.
Why?
It's the same reason that you gave for the Calvin Ridley. Like I think that each of these rookies can produce similar numbers as Stephon Diggs in their respective offenses, but I get an extra 3-4 years, right? Because Stephon Diggs is
26.
Yeah, 26. I think
he's...
Does he turn 27 this year? Yeah, he's turning 27 this month. So next year when he hits that 28, and it's like he's the, you know, the smaller burner type that isn't quite as, you know, durable, I believe. I should take that back because like guys like Marvin Harrison have made it pretty deep into their careers too. But I'm just less comfortable with going with the 27-year-old Diggs versus a 21, 22-year-old rookie that's doing similar numbers, you know?
Yep.
Jefferson's a great example because like I think very little points separate the two on the season, and he's a rookie, you know, and he's got 5 years. So,
no, I think on the season, Diggs is significantly higher than almost all these guys, right?
I'm gonna look it up. We just keep having to fact check ourselves.
I mean, we weren't planning.
Should we go fantasy stats?
Yeah, I'm going weeks 1 through 9. Stephon Diggs is 4. He's averaging 18 points per game. Jefferson is 22, averaging 14 points a game.
And then I think, didn't Jefferson like basically not come on the scene until week 2 or 3, though?
Yes. So let's look at it from week 3 to 9.
Yeah.
And then look at their average points because Jefferson has a bye, Diggs has not.
Yeah.
After the first 2 weeks, Diggs is 7th. He's averaging 16.6. And Jefferson is 11. He's averaging more points, 17.45. So yeah.
Yeah. So since he came on, like I'm comfortable with that. And just given the age gap, it's pretty easy. And like, I know you feel better about the volume in that passing offense now that Josh Allen's kind of turned things around, but do you feel differently about that situation at all? Or is it pretty similar to what you felt before?
With Diggs? Diggs?
Yes.
Oh, no. I mean, the way that they've opened up the offense, absolutely. No, I'm not. I was low on Diggs based on 2019 offense. This 2020 offense is completely different than what we saw in 2019.
Diggs has 91 targets already. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you recall, I mean, he would have a 20% market share, basically, of the team's...
Last year's targets,
The last year's targets. I mean, it's completely different. It's a completely different offense. I mean, Allen's going to throw for over 600 passes.
Yeah, this is awesome.
That's 100-plus targets injected into the offense this year.
Yeah. And Diggs will remain an exciting piece of this passing offense. But again, I'm happy with what I'm getting out of the other guys, you know?
He's going to face the same thing that Keenan Allen's facing next year. Keenan Allen turned 28, and now he's not as exciting.
You want to know what's interesting, though? I came full circle. So... You probably remember this, but was it 2 years ago or the end of, like, beginning of last year? Keenan Allen was one of my favorite sells.
Keenan Allen, he was this year. He was your big sell this year.
It was definitely last year or the year before. It was before his 27 year old season. I've got it documented somewhere. I can go back and look. Yeah. But I'll just do this while we're talking. But
pretty sure is your top sell this year.
I've come full circle on Keenan Allen, just like because the concerns I had with him. It was definitely last year because it was while Rivers was still the quarterback. Because his biggest red flag was, what's going to happen with Rivers? You can't replace the kind of the kind of volume that Rivers was injecting into that offense very easily, at least. And Herbert not only has not skipped a beat with what Rivers was doing, but he's excelled beyond that. And Keenan Allen is the main benefactor of it. And like, I've come full circle. I have fewer concerns about his age than I used to, because like, I think he's just going to continue to get like that max production each year. He's shown that he's durable, and I feel much differently about Keenan Allen than I did last year. So, as I'm sure a lot of people do.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the thing is, he's still aging, right? And his value is not at the point where it's hard, dude. It's hard. He's, once again, if you buy Keenan Allen now, consider that dead equity. Like, you're not going to get more than what his production is going to be. So you're basically going to have to hold on to him until he retires.
Yeah.
Which is okay, as long as you don't have an entire team like that, which I see a lot of teams in our leagues. And what I've seen historically is the teams that go after a guy like Keenan Allen are typically the teams that are historically old, and they just continually get old and old and old. And those teams go to the bottom of your league and they stay there for a couple of years until they get younger and fresher, right? They're forced to rebuild, where it's not an option. You are forced to rebuild instead of retool, because a lot of those teams don't do retooling well. They just continually go after older players, and they're forced to be at the bottom of the league until they figure out how to get young talent. So that's my only concern with a guy like Keenan Allen, which is where Diggs is heading, which is why he was 8 on my list.
Oh, by the way, really quickly, I did find some documentation around my feelings around Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
February 10th, Dynasty buy window alert. Keenan Allen. I even called out Mike Williams, Hunter Henry. They should each hit a low point in value throughout the coming weeks of the offseason. The excitement of bringing on a new quarterback via free agency or in the draft will cause them to recover most of what is lost. Man, that was pretty much spot on from February, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good.
So I was buying Keenan in February, and then it was last season that I was concerned, because I just didn't see an end in sight for Philip Rivers. And I could see, I thought he was going to just kind of be like, he would ride off into the sunset. You know, he'd be, you know, 40, 41 years old and just, you know, a shell of the quarterback he once was. Although he's doing decent this season, but I just think that Rivers' degradation was impacting Keenan's value significantly. So, but yeah, continue.
Yeah, it's just, it's so Keenan, all these guys that we talked about are not roster dependent. You could be rebuilding, you could be contending, and all 10 of these guys are good to own.
I agree.
So it's just why Keenan just kind of falls out of that range, but that's where Diggs is heading. So you kind of got like one more year of that before you start to lose out on Diggs's resale value, which just gives you, once again, it's not about what's wrong with having good players. It's more about roster flexibility. You know, if you want to retool and you want to flip a switch, or if you want to do something different with your team, when you have players like Keenan Allen, Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas soon, Devonta Adams soon, once they hit that 28, 29, you're forced to just hold on to them, or else you lose a significant production versus value return.
Yeah, it's harder to get equal. It's harder to get market value for those guys. You usually have to sell low on them if you want to move them.
Yeah, and it's relative to production,
yep.
Right? It's not even market value, because market value is different in every league, but it's relative to production, mm-hmm. which is the issue. So yeah, I mean, listen to this. This is funny. So 3 through 9, listen to this, these numbers: 30.5, 14, 5, 39, 5, 9. Okay. Versus.
Those are a bunch of numbers. Yep.
Yep. 15, 17, 20, 16, 11, 15, 21. What would you rather have?
Fantasy points per week?
Yeah.
Probably the consistency.
So Jefferson is averaging 17.45 points. Diggs is averaging 16.63.
Oh, Diggs is consistent.
Diggs' low week is 11. His high week is 21. So he's had seven straight weeks where he's finished between 11 and 21.
I like that.
Yep. And Jefferson's high is 39.6, and his low is two games of five.
Yep.
So, yeah, interesting. Yeah, because if I would have looked at those numbers across the board, I would have said Diggs is averaging more fantasy points per game. But that 39.6 point week just bumps up that 17.5 average so much.
Yeah, and that's a good one season look at it. But again, when you there's yeah dynasty, you have to look at more things. Yeah.
No, good talk.
Yeah, that was fun.
I enjoyed that.
Do you want to run through polls really quick?
Yeah, let's do polls.
All right, let's finish things off with the polls, then we'll wrap things up.
Yeah.
For the two or three new one or two new listeners. We like to do a series of polls just to basically identify how volatile rookie values are from week to week based on performance. Izzy and I had a great conversation pre-podcast where we talked about how rookies just don't have the history of performances where they don't have a ton of value insulation yet. So like from week to week, based on their performance, their value can change significantly. Whereas like a player...
Their insulation is still there, but the deviation is not.
Sure, I would agree with that.
Because people are still trying to figure out their floor versus ceiling and that where those players fall into. And the week-to-week like effects of that change the floor and ceiling quite a bit.
When comparing to other rookies, I think that's probably the biggest caveat.
Correct.
So we've done a series of polls since almost the beginning of the season just to kind of see where these rookies end up, just a couple of them. And this is just our quick little recap of where we're sitting with each of these as of the current week.
Yes. So this one is Clyde versus Jonathan Taylor. And kind of, I would say the favorite over the course of the year is Jonathan Taylor. In week seven, to give you an example, Jonathan Taylor was 67-33. This was the week that Le'Veon Bell joined the Chiefs. So 2/3 of people wanted Taylor. Week eight, last week, Clyde was up 63%. To Taylor's 37%. So completely flipped. And then this week, what do you think it is?
I mean,
so 63-37 last year.
Jonathan Taylor's usage still is a great concern for a lot of people that own him. So I think that Clyde Edwards probably 58-60.
Yeah, you know, he made more ground. So it's 67-33.
Okay, wow.
So
wow.
2 weeks ago, it was Taylor by 2/3. 2 weeks later, it's Clyde by 2/3.
That's wild.
Interestingly enough, Jonathan Taylor got benched, but he still out-touched Clyde Edwards-Helaire this week.
Oh, yeah, he's benched after his fumble, yep.
Yeah, so it's just, I think the bottom might be falling out of Jonathan Taylor. So that's that. So let's go to the Burrow-Herbert-Tua poll.
I like this one because it was originally Burrow versus Herbert, and then we added Tua into the mix once he was named the starter. So it's kind of created a nice, cool little dynamic. And now Tua's got some performance under his belt.
Yes.
And I think it's funny, too. So the first time we tweeted out was 3 weeks ago, and I think Tua was, you're going to recap it. But then the second week we tried to guess, and we were almost exactly right. And this week I would have had a hard time guessing. I would imagine Tua would have gone up from 4 to maybe what like 10. What?
Do you recall your prediction? I remember mine.
Yeah, I had Herbert outkicking Burrow this week because I'm like, I'm ready for people to kind of realize that his performance is not going away. And you can expect that from week to week out of him. I think I finally had Herbert taking out Burrow this week. Yeah, here it is. I had 47-45-8. Herbert, Burrow, Tua.
That's what mine was.
Well, then mine was 45-43-12.
So Burrow down to 43. Okay. So what do you think it is this week based on the performance that we saw? So Herbert went for 328-2.
I like my prediction.
Tua went 248-2 with 35 on the ground.
Yeah, Burrow was off. So I liked Herbert to overtake him and Tua to pick up some of Burrow's votes.
Yeah. So we didn't get as many votes as we've gotten in the past. So last week we had 408 votes, and it was 50% for Burrow, 46% for Herbert, 4% for Tua. The week before it was 47-45-8. Burrow still on top. Tua was at 8. This week it is 50% for Burrow again.
No, he went up?
No, he stayed the same. He flatlined. He was 50% last week.
Wow.
217 votes. He's at 50%. So
that's pretty impressive conviction from the Twitter crowd.
Yeah. Herbert went 328-2 and went down 5%.
And he was a fingertip away from being 340-3.
Correct. So Tua basically, Burrow stayed the same and Tua gobbled up 5% from Herbert.
And what did Tua finish again?
9%.
Okay. Wow. Crazy. Jeez.
Very surprising. I thought for sure with Burrow sitting out the week, people would kind of like see another big performance from Herbert and that would put him over the top. We both were thinking the same thing. Incorrect.
Somebody tweeted this out and they basically prefaced it with saying this is not a popular take, but they compared Herbert's and Mahomes' first 7 or 8 weeks, I guess, as a starting quarterback, and they were strikingly similar.
Dude, he looks good, man.
Yeah, he does.
He does. He does. But at the same token,
Anthony Lynn doesn't look good, but yeah, Herbert does.
Oh God, that guy's an idiot. yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. Those are fun to track.
Yes. Yes, they are.
And those are the two that we got. Is that it?
No, we got the Steelers wide receivers.
All right, one more. One more. Oh, yeah. Now, yeah, Chase Claypool coming down with 13 targets in a game.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck is going to happen with this one? So, Juju, Claypool, Deontay Johnson. I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay. So, last week, Juju was at 26%. Deontay was at 41%. Claypool was at 33%. Our first ever poll of this was 2 weeks ago. And it was 52% for Claypool, 25% for Deontay, 23% for Juju. Then obviously it shifted when Deontay came back and had that big target game, big solid game. 41% for him, 33% for Claypool, Juju 26%. Now we're this week. Juju had 6 for 93 and a touchdown. Deontay had 6 for 77. And Claypool had 8 for 63. And I'm 90% sure I'm going off the top of my head. Claypool had 13 targets. Deontay had 10, and Juju, I believe, had 8.
That's wild.
7 or 8. What do you think it is this week?
I think it goes just like what you said for this week's performance. I think the three are close enough where each week of performance is going to determine what their current value is. So I'm going to say...
So just to give you a reminder, Deontay was 41, Claypool was 33, Juju was 26. That was last week.
The three-way tie.
Yeah, I mean, there's a gap. Oh, you want a three-way tie?
I think there's going to be a three-way tie, yeah. Because it's just like, man, pick them.
So 33, 33, 33?
Yeah, what the hell?
I'm surprised by this. 40% for Juju.
Wow, completely 180.
37 for Deontay. 23 for Claypool.
Wow, yeah.
Just because Juju scored a touchdown.
Touchdown bias, recency and touchdown bias. Okay.
Well, I mean, Claypool had the most targets, followed by Deontay.
Well, targets don't matter. It's fantasy points.
It's, yeah, and it's the wrong way to do it.
Should we do a point per target league?
That would be points. Targets is a points indicator over the long run. So, I mean, that's essentially what you should be going after.
That's crazy.
Right? Week to week, it changes, but. Long term, the person that has the most targets over a 16-game sample is odds-on favorite over somebody that has less targets.
Yeah.
You know, assuming they're on the same team, right?
Yep, I agree. I love looking at those polls. But, it's so fun.
God, it's interesting. I'm very surprised that Claypool dropped 10%.
Yeah.
So essentially, just like Burrow stayed the same, Tua gobbled up Herbert despite the performances. Same thing happened here. It seems like Deontay is kind of holding steady where Juju and Claypool are changing based on the week's
radically match. Changing, not just changing.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. Wow. It's nice to see Juju recovering some of his perceived value, at least, you know, because I wasn't counting him out.
Yeah. And just to end this, I did a fun one. I did a Clyde Taylor Swift Dobbins poll this week.
Ooh.
757 votes.
Jeez.
What do you think the results are?
Well, since we just identified that we're fantasy points in recency bias on these polls. I'm going to go Dobbins.
Even though he just had like 10 for 20 this week.
Yeah, yes. Dobbins, okay. Dobbins, Swift, Clyde, Taylor.
That order is close.
Okay, dang it.
Swift, did he even score a touchdown this week?
No, he didn't.
Or last week. But Clyde did. He scored a touchdown this week.
But Clyde came up to second.
Yes.
That's
Dobbins
awesome.
At 35%. Clyde at 26%. Swift at 21%. Taylor at 18%.
Oof. Wow. That's insane.
So whoever scored a touchdown last, that is the preference.
And if they both score a touchdown, then it just chuck.
Correct.
There you go.
I'm going to do the Clyde Taylor Swift Dobbins poll week after week now.
Let's keep tracking them. We're going to have like this full segment of polls at the end. I hope you guys like it because we're kind of hitting it over the head right now with a hammer.
Yeah. So we can talk a little bit more about, I've changed my tune on polls. I'm less angry at polls and more understanding after really thinking about it.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it next week.
Next week on the TTC podcast, Izzy is not as mad anymore.
I am not as angry.
He's not as angry. That's all we got for polls, and that's all we got for this episode. Thank you once again for tuning in. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at FF Dynasty Trades. Check us out on the website, dynastytradecalculator.com, where subscriptions are as little as $3 a month. Thank you for listening again. See ya. Bye. My opponent's gonna call cupcakes in. It's no hate, just facts. There's just no way I'm last. Technically, I'm last.